Hello, ladies and gentlemen. We come to you live from the women's toilets in the Crystal Maze.
We are in our most intimate recording studio, yes.
Yeah, you can.
I mean, I could flush it to really prove it. Hang on.
That feels like the most appropriate sound to start a world's worst podcast here. Anyway, you are about to listen to our latest show with Helen McCarthy, all about the world's worst cult, and we would like you to join our cult. If you have been listening for a while but have just been downloading but not subscribing, now is your time. Mm-hmm. Go to your podcast app, hit the subscribe button, and become a fully fledged member.
It's the most beneficial way to us for the show to pop up on people's iTunes libraries and other podcast apps. So if you are already subscribing, recommend us to a friend, make sure they hit the subscribe button, and think of it as your good deed for the week in supporting the show.
Cool, thanks very much. And now, Barry, hit the music. Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to Worst Foot Forward, the podcast that each week celebrates the best of the worst. I'm Ben Vanderveld, and this week you join us in a deserted log cabin in the middle of the Appalachian Mountains. I am wearing my own finely pressed purple robe. I have prayed to the seven gods of the 17 moons of Jupiter, and I have finally finished mixing our delicious mulberry and nettle punch, which is going to transport all of our souls to the other side of one of those moons. Or is it? Because this is quite a middle-class cult meeting. It's not going to be the punch that's going to transport you into outer space. It's going to be our range of canapes. Will you go for the maple leaf pate, or or perhaps the thinly sliced beaver tongue? But if I were you, I'd watch out for the elk moose cheese. The elk moose cheese? The elk cheese moose.
Don't question yourself. Just keep going. I'm loving where this is headed.
All I need is my cult members to turn up. I send them out foraging a few days ago, and they've not really come back yet. I'll just switch on the television to see what's going on. Oh, well, that's interesting. It seems like the CIA are on local cable TV, closing in on a strange shack in the woods. I'll just open the door just to check it. Oh, hi there, officers. Would you like to come in and maybe try some canapes with me? I'm sure that that the gods of the moons of Jupiter would be delighted to invite you over to their houses. Anyway, before we continue with this, I must introduce my co-host. He is the David to my Koresh. the inimitable Barry McStay. Don't blow your nose.
I'm sorry, I've tasted some of the punch.
Hey, hang on, there's got to be someone at home who'll go, no, Ben, cults are something the FBI would handle, not the CIA.
Shit, that's such a good point.
Yeah. We know our listeners well enough to know they'll be sending us footnotes.
Yeah, that's a good point.
This is such an exciting episode.
It's really good fun. I can't wait to do it.
One of my favourite things to do when I can't sleep is to go read about some cult sieges on Wikipedia.
For real?
I'd say favourite. You know, when you can't sleep, you either read about serial killers or cults.
I feel
like they're the two things that Wikipedia draws you into.
Mm-hmm.
And I have definitely read about Waco at least twice at 3 a.m, which is the wrong time to read about Waco.
My memory of Waco is first watching Bill Hicks do stand-up comedy all about the Waco siege. Fuck, and that's a word that I forgot to mention. Compound. It's not a shack. Compound. What is it about cults and compounds? Nothing nice ever happens in a compound. You never go, oh, I visited the vegan compound and came back feeling refreshed.
And even compound nouns, I can't even get on board with them.
No, not at all.
I'm going to introduce our guest.
Go for it.
Our guest this week is a freelance writer, journalist, and host of the podcast That's a Cult, a show about groups of people on the internet, why they connect with each other, and how these groups could sometimes, even just a little bit, be compared to cults. I mean, I don't know. This whole idea of groups of strangers bonding together over seemingly bizarre and mundane things on the internet for no real reason other than to feel some sense of belonging in an otherwise meaningless existence, bonding behind one or two charismatic leaders who can talk the talk with rewards of salvation offered at a price levied on the weak-minded and lonely, it's all a bit far-fetched. Isn't it, listeners? Do remember to donate to our Patreon in exchange for all sorts of exclusive bonus content, by the way. With us to make sure we are properly brainwashed and clean deep inside all the cavities of the cerebellum, it's Helen McCarthy.
Hi, thank you for having me so much. And it is the FBI. if they have firearms, it's the ATF.
What's ATF stand for?
ATF is alcohol, tobacco, firearms. And they're the people who sort of were involved in Waco.
Surely the DEA would cover the things that the ATF would cover. Yeah, if you start a cult, you need to watch out for acronyms.
I know.
If the IOC show up, yeah. You should be worried with javelins. Why did you start a podcast all about cults?
I do the same thing. I get stuck in Wikipedia reading about cults. I'm obsessed with why people can get so sucked into a community when everybody else on the outside is like, you're in a cult, seriously, this is bad. But inside, the perception's totally different. And it sort of hit me one day when I was, this sounds so bougie, I was having my nails done and the lady who does my nails said, have you, because we talked about cults and serial kills all the time, and she said, have you heard... Oh, I'm not going to say the brand because it might be a problem, but it's a takeaway pizza company. And she said, have you heard that they apparently have a cult? And I Googled it and I couldn't really find anything, but apparently they have like these big corporate conferences where everybody gets really hyped and it is a lot like a cult meeting. So I just sort of started thinking about all these places that we gather on the internet and where we talk to strangers we've never met, which is just normal. Like when you, because I grew up when chat room was like a really negative, automatically negative phrase, like don't talk to strangers on the internet. Like I got banned from MSN because it was suspicious to talk to strangers on the internet. And now I do it every day. You probably do it every day. I don't know a lot of the people I follow on Twitter. It's just a normal part of the internet. So I thought people must gather together, even though it's online, it's still the real world. And how sinister can that shit get? I've done multi-level marketing, which is like, I try and be very objective and say, it's got bits of cult, it's got bits of not cult. I can see how it's both. MLM, it's really sinister.
I had some friends of friends try to recruit me to that. And I went and met them because when I've met them before, they've been really nice people. And this time it was weird, like a weird veil had gone over their eyes. And I came back and like spoke to my much more sensible than me wife. And I think I opened with, I think I've just been recruited to a pyramid scheme. To which he answered, yes, you have. Stop it immediately.
Yeah.
But it's weird how they always, like, no one, they always try and recruit you using essential oils. It's never like, would you like to be part of this whiskey tasting group?
You want to be worried if the MLM show up at your compound, though.
Yeah.
You'll take you down with our essential oils. No, we'll take one of you down, and then you have to take two people down, and they have to take two people down.
But yeah, some people are super successful at it, and they have white Range Rovers, and they do really well. So, I mean, for some people it works.
That is the common denominator I always saw, is it, like that it would be that particular car. And also, there's a very particular fashion sense for a lot of these people.
Yeah.
Really sharply pressed shirts with cufflinks always tucked into jeans that are one size too small for them.
Like they have a base in a volcano.
Yes, exactly. Yeah, it's the Hank Scorpio fashion range.
We always ask our guest, Helen, what they're the worst at in the world. What would you say that you are worst at?
It's a toss-up between mental arithmetic. Like, I cannot divide a really simple bill. I did 75 divided by 3 on a calculator a few weeks ago, and it did not occur to me what was wrong with that. But most of all, I think I'm particularly bad at opening bottles of water. I really can't do it. I have, like, a permanent callus on my hand. It's not big, it's not like disgusting, but there is a permanent bit of dry skin because I really refuse to ask a stranger in the street to open a bottle of Evian for me because it just feels
the screw
like...
Tops or the flip sports bottle ones?
Oh, the sports tops are easy, they're fine, but then I feel a bit like infantile drinking out of that. But a screw top, cannot do it. It's just so difficult. And then I hate it when I do get them off, and it's been filled virtually to the top,
Evian,
and then there's water on me. Yeah. So I've won, but I've lost at the same time.
Is it just bottles of water? Because you know there are other liquids that come in screw tops.
I don't really drink soft drinks.
Right.
I'll be honest, it's water, black coffee or wine. Screwtop wine doesn't seem to be anywhere near as difficult as screwtop water. I don't know why. Yeah.
I think there's a greater motivation to get in there. Listeners, as you can imagine, sorry, I say listeners, I should call you acolytes. this week, we are going to be talking about the world's worst cult. Obviously,
very beautifully said, Ben.
Thank you. Very important that I say that
people
correctly.
People have often said you're a cult figure, haven't they?
That one reviewer. Barry, you're going to start us off.
I'm starting with at blockbuster level. I'm starting with the Jedis. The Church of Jediism, in Britain anyway, was founded by a guy called Daniel Jones, or to give him his Jedi name, Morda Heyhall.
How do you get your Jedi name?
I think he gave it to himself.
Oh, right. It's not like you take your pet's first name and then your grandma's surname and jumble the letters up.
It could well have been, or, you know, Yoda appeared to him in a vision. Daniel Jones from Wales. Yeah, little Welsh guy, little Welsh Jedi. So that was in 2007. In 2009, the reason I just want to talk about this one story. In 2009, Jones was removed from a Tesco in Bangor in Wales for refusing to remove his hood on religious grounds.
Amazing.
He was in a queue and the member of staff said, "Can you please put your hood down?" And he said, "No, I'll keep it up for because I'm a Jedi." And he gave them a Church of the Jedi business card and they were like, "Bollocks, pull your hood down." And he was leveling charges of discrimination against them. And Tesco fought back and he said, "No, when I'm a Jedi, I it's important I wear a hood and I do it when I'm out in public." And Tesco issued a statement saying, "He hasn't been banned. Jedis are very welcome to shop in our stores, although we would ask them to remove their hoods. Obi-Wan Kenobi, Yoda and Luke Skywalker all appeared hoodless without ever going over to the dark side, and we are only aware of the Emperor as one who never removed his hood." A little bit of shade from Tesco there. "If Jedi walk around our stores with hoods on, they'll miss lots of special offers."
I mean, whoever works the PR firm who did that can take the month off.
I also read about Honohana Sanpoyo. A lot of my cults are Japanese, guys. Mm-hmm. It was founded by a guy called Hogen Fukunaga. In 1987, he'd been preaching since 1980. In 1980, he was 34, and he had debts of 500 million yen, which at the time worked out as $2.1 million. So a lot of debt. When you're short of money, you go into preaching and publishing, in his case, at least 70 books.
Wow.
To up his income a little bit. And when he founded this church, he basically said Fukunaga was going to save us all in 1987. And we're all saved now, so that obviously worked. His cult specialised in what he called foot reading. So you know the way we have people who read your palm?
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
He did that with the feet. And at the charge of $900 a pop.
That sounds fine.
That sounds absolutely completely above board.
Is that $900 per foot? $900 per reading?
Literally, worst foot forward. People would come to him with a problem and say, "Well, if you want the full diagnosis, you're going to need to get your foot read at the cost of this 900 quid. And then he would sort of say, "Oh, you've got this problem or that problem in your life, and that problem's only going to get worse if you don't attend some seminars with me." Which, and some of these seminars would make him up to 2.25 million yen a go.
I wish I had the entrepreneurial ability of some of these cult leaders.
Oh, yeah, he was very full bore.
Money.
Yeah.
Untrue how much money you can make as a cult leader. Yeah. You've obviously got to have no morals. You've got to be like the worst person in the world and have no empathy for anybody, but you can make so much money. It's untrue. Like, I know I'm saying it again, but Scientology, they're going to come after me if I keep talking about Scientology. But people will easily spend like $50,000 to $100,000 to get up the rankings. And I just don't understand how anybody has like that money to throw at seminars.
You need to go to my seminar on luring people away from their money. Actually, it's over a course of several months. He's got to this guy. He really like went all in, saying you have to then get people to come and see me. Like he told people, he very upfront said, lie to people and evangelize on behalf of me, because it ultimately they'll be saved, and even if they don't believe, you have to get them to come see me, because by coming see me they will be saved. That was his whole thing. You know, remember I said he was $500 million in 500 million yen in debt? He then built a headquarters for this cult which cost 600 million yen. And he would wear these amazing like $5,000 suits. The cult made something like 60 billion yen over 13 years. And he met Gorbachev, he met John Paul II, he met Clinton, Pasteur, Mother Teresa.
To be fair, Jimmy Savile did regularly spend time with Diana and Charles.
This is true.
Yeah.
Yeah, we know these things to be true.
Yeah, in another universe, the cult of Savile would be a...
We all have to wear those stupid tinted glasses he wore and tracksuits.
Tracksuits, yeah.
Eventually, you'll be glad to know, Hogan Fukunaga was caught, 12 years in jail, and 9 of his followers were also convicted in a mass fraud case.
Good.
Which is a happy ending, I think we can all agree. I also read about a group called PL Kyodan, who were a Japanese cult as well, founded in 1946. At the end of the last century, they claimed about 2.5 million adherents worldwide. They're very sort of evangelical in Japan. Their goal, they say man's goal is self-expression, and they're all about world peace, and their big motto is life is art. And the reason I really like them is, along with hospitals and things, they also run a golf course. and several of their churches have rooftop driving ranges.
That sounds a bit like, have you seen Wild Wild Country on Netflix? About,
oh, no.
I can't remember the name of the cult, but
Oregon?
Yeah, they all wore red. They literally bought a town and just kicked the inhabitants out. They were like, bye, we own this now. They had an airport. They had a shopping centre. The leader had like something like 15 Rolls Royces.
Yeah.
And they were just fine with it. They had an army. They set up their own army. They're one of the most industrious cults.
Yeah, you've got to admire the hard work of some of these cults, to be fair.
Mm.
One of my favourites is Panawave. They're yet again another Japanese cult.
Panawave.
Yeah.
Are you sure that's not a brand of washing up liquid?
I think they made several VHS movies in the late 90s. Well, they're an offshoot of a group founded in 1977 called Chino Shoho, founded by a woman called Yuko Chino, who died in 2006. And in the 1980s, a sort of a scientific faction grew out of this sect. And their big thing was electromagnetic waves are bad, guys. Mm-hmm. They're the cause of environmental changes and climate change, and they could be the death of us all. So they built what they call the Panawave Lab in the Fukui Prefecture in Honshu in Japan. Basically, they said, we've done some research. We think this place is at less risk of electromagnetic waves, or this is going to be our base or our compound. Then in the early 1990s, they thought, no, they're onto us. We're going to be caught. So they started, they basically took it on the road and drove around Japan in white vans and started dressing in white. That's always a bad sign when cults start dressing in white. Like that's when you need to start watching them. Indeed, the police did. But they said white was going to protect them from scalar electromagnetic waves, which were being fired at them, of course, by communists. So they would have these white vans and white clothes and white boots, and wherever they would like pull over for a few days, they would cover the trees and road barriers in white as well to ward off the electromagnetic waves. And they basically said Chino, who was with them, she was quite ill with cancer at the time, they were like, if she dies, the world is going to die. Like, it's doomsday, so we need to keep protecting her and keep her on the move. They really grabbed attention, though, in 2003 in March, when they attempted to capture an Arctic seal from a river in Tokyo.
What, because it was white and it must be protected?
Well, in a way, yes. This is a seal called Tana Chan, which had become a bit of a celebrity in Tokyo. It had arrived in the previous year.
Hang on. This cult tried to capture a celebrity seal.
Yes, coming soon to Channel 5.
Okay.
Cults try capture celebrity seals. It had appeared in the river, and people go, oh, that's quite interesting. That's an Arctic seal. It's clearly gotten lost and ended up in Tokyo. And the Panawave saw this and thought, the electromagnetic waves have scrambled the seal's brain and he's gotten lost, and it's led him astray to Tokyo. We've got to save him, because if we don't, it's going to be doomsday. Like if Chino dies, it's going to be the end of the world. If we don't rescue this seal, The end of the world is nigh.
Hang on. Have they misunderstood the meaning of the seventh seal? Is that what's happened here?
Perhaps, yeah. They genuinely, like, tried to catch him with fishing nets. And when police investigated, they discovered that they had built two white-lined pools in a compound to house him in before they could get him to the Arctic and re-release him. So they'd done all their groundwork, or their water work, in advance. And then the next month, they had an encounter with the police. There was a standoff on the road, and the police said they needed to get off the road. They were causing obstructions, and they said, no, we're about to have a close encounter with the 10th planet. Our old friend Nibiru, Ben.
No way!
Which we've talked about. It may not have been Nibiru. They did call it a mysterious 10th planet. We all know it's Nibiru, fans of the show. But yeah, they said, yeah, the Earth is going to be struck by this planet or have a very close encounter with it on the 15th of May. And it's going to reverse the poles, and there's going to be typhoons and volcanoes, and most of humanity will be wiped out. 15th of May happened, and a rumble struck Tokyo. There was an earthquake in Tokyo.
Oh, shit.
Yeah, and shit was really going down, Ben. The earthquake was so violent that one 15-year-old boy broke an arm falling out of bed.
That was
how bad the earthquake was. They were nearly my favourites.
They're amazing.
They're really good. But I'm going to go with Onbana, or Bullet Bana. Onbana is a shrine, not in Japan. It's in Pali district near Jodhpur in India. And the deity at the shrine is a motorbike. A 350cc Royal Enfield Bullet, to be precise.
Is that the motorbike that the book Zen and the Art of Motorcycle Maintenance is based on?
Oh, I don't know.
Maybe. No, it obviously isn't. I'm talking shit.
I mean, it might be, Ben, because this shrine attracts hundreds of devotees every day. On the 2nd of December 1991, this guy called Onbana lost control of his bike and it hit a tree by the side of the road, and he died immediately. And the bike fell into a ditch, and the police arrived and they removed the motorbike to the local station. And that night, it disappeared and reappeared the next day at the crash site. The police had no idea how it had gotten there, so they went and took the bike away again, and they emptied the tank and they locked it up. And again, it disappeared and reappeared at the crash site. And they kept, according to articles I've read, they did this several times, of like, I'm presuming, like, doing Wile E. Coyote style, increasingly, like, arcane ways, like, locking it in a safe, wrapping the safe in chains, dropping it to the bottom of the ocean. But yeah, it's reappearing over and over and over again. So it became sort of known as this local miracle. And now it's kept in a glass case at the side of the road. And it's meant to offer succour to distressed travellers.
Hang on, so they've David Blained this poor motorbike.
Yes. In his greatest trick yet. But people leave offerings at the site of the shrine. They sing songs.
Castrol GTX.
Well, they do tie red threads around and put floral wreaths and burn incense there. And they keep a 24-hour fire burning at the site, which I feel is slightly tasteless for a crash site. But the best part of all is apparently they leave little bottles of alcohol by it. Never, ever drink and drive if you're forming a cult, Ben.
No. I'll level with you with this episode of the show. Like, I sometimes wonder about the collective sanity of humankind. Yeah. But I'm always like, no, they're outliers. But this is large groups of people doing batshit crazy things.
Yeah, lots of people every day just stop and have a little... I mean, I have plenty of friends who have statues of the Sacred Heart in their house or would touch the same cross on the way out of church the same day or whatever. So, I mean, it's just a different variant of it, but still the image of a motorbike in a glass case being prayed to just tickled me so much that, yeah, I'm going to pick Onbana as the world's worst cult.
I mean, we need to get in touch with the producers of Top Gear, because this feels like the ultimate pilgrimage for middle-aged men. I just want to see Clarkson prostrating himself before this thing.
I really feel like a motorbike in a glass case is definitely something that a very trendy, expensive advertising agency would have in a foyer. I just feel like they would have that in the middle of the waiting room just to be like, we are so creative. Yeah. We put a motorbike in a case.
And every day people stop and take a knee. I can see that. The way in.
Well, what it should really be the Damien Hirst version, which is a motorbike in formaldehyde split down the middle.
I tried to find a cult that was a complete disaster. I really wanted to know if there were any, like, incompetent cult leaders, but I googled incompetent cult leader and all I really got was some stuff about Jeremy Corbyn and a really negative review of IKEA customer services titled Cult of Incompetence. So I mean, all cults pretty much are bad. They almost always end in disaster. There's always some like manipulation, abuse, financial mismanagement, like bad shit all the time. But at the beginning, you can kind of see why people join for the big ones. So for things like People's Temple, people are generally running away from something. Their life is coming to a point where they need to join a community. They just get something out of that. The cult offers them this kind of utopia. Also, nobody says the word cult initially. The People's Temple, the one run by Jim Jones with the famous Kool-Aid drinking incident, that was originally, for a lot of people, like a multicultural haven from the rest of the world, because it was in the middle of the 60s and 70s. So it served a purpose. You can see why people initially joined, and you can see why it's so hard to leave, because, you know, you get shot. So it makes sense. But I found a cult that I'd not heard of before that is so elaborate and shocking and deranged that I really don't know how it was initially sold to anybody. I really don't know how he convinced anybody to join. And I'm afraid it is quite dark.
Go for it. That's all right.
So we'll have to... I've edited some of the worst parts out. People can definitely Google it if they really want to know the worst of the worst. But they were called the Ant Hill Kids, which sounds like a band, but it's not.
I mean, it sounds like the gangsters from the Wacky Racers. They were the Ant Hill Mob.
Ant Hill Kids, established in 1977 in Quebec, Canada, and the leader, I had to find several YouTube videos to get the pronunciation of his name, but I'm pretty sure it's Rock Terrier. It's like a French spelling of his name. So like all good cults, this one was about an impending doomsday. So there's not much detail about the origins of it, but apparently Terrier convinced a group of people to quit their jobs and join his commune. This isn't a compound, by the way. Commune, this is the smaller cousin, the commune. And start preparing for the end of the world.
Can I just say, by the way, all of these doomsday cults get it so wrong by putting doomsday as imminent. They just say, doomsday's coming in like 300 years, guys. Mm-hmm. But let's start the prep now without the pressure of me at some point having to say, oh yeah, doomsday's tomorrow.
Yeah, well, it's like your mum preparing for Christmas dinner.
Yeah. it starts
doing a dry run.
I just think they always paint themselves into a corner by someone going, when's it coming though, actually? The 15th of May. Damn it.
So there's just very little info on how he really convinced people to do all this. Like, it's just not out there. So I was trying to imagine how he did it. Was there some bribery involved? Was it just like, listen, the world is ending and this is your best chance. I mean, it's just such a bizarre beginning for a cult, really, because usually there's a slow burn.
What was their methods, or what was his what did their preparation for doomsday involve?
Well, we'll get there. I feel like the doomsday message got lost. I don't feel like people focused on it too much, but the reason they were called the Anthill Kids is apparently because ants are committed hard workers who get on with what they need to get on with. Mm-hmm. It's a bit tight on the ants. His followers called him Moses.
Yeah.
So that's like the deferential vibe he was going for.
Yeah, it's an immediate
alarm.
You know,
there's the whole preparing for floods and the end of the world. Yeah. And it fit. The commune was originally, this is a quote, free of sin and stood for equality and unity. Again, this definitely got lost in their day-to-day activity. Followers could not contact their families, couldn't speak to each other if Terrier wasn't present.
Oh, wow.
They couldn't have sex with each other, which, as we all know, is like one of the main reasons to join a cult anyway. So.
I thought you were going to say they couldn't have sex unless this guy was present as well.
Well, he had to be involved in the sex for it to happen.
Oh, wow.
He was an alcoholic. He spied on his followers. If anybody wanted to leave, he beat them with belts or hammers, which are very different.
Did you get to choose?
I feel. I don't think you got to choose. Other punishments include... This is where it really starts to get dark, so listener discretion advised. Other punishments included suspending people from the ceiling.
By what?
By belts or hammers.
Oh, okay. I hate being suspended by my hammer.
Hairs from their body.
Yeah.
Or defecating on them.
Oh.
It got dirty really quick. His doomsday message was the world was going to end in 1979, but that God would spare Quebec specifically.
Oh my God.
So they were kind of starting the world from scratch from their small rural area in Quebec.
That's
the
so
world
good.
Did not end.
Are you sure?
This might be a simulation, I don't know, but it apparently did not end. And he came up with a really shit reason why, and that is that God operates on different time zones.
So God has a different
calendar. I feel like God is all the time zones. He's omnipresent.
Yeah.
It's mad. He had concubines, so if you were female in the cult, you had to have sex with him. That was, like, probably day one. So he had 26 children. He liked to do surgery on people. Not with belts or hammers, but with kitchen utensils, pliers, or a blowtorch, while fully conscious. And I really want to know how he decided which to use. Do you get the spatula? Do you get a blowtorch? Is it dependent on mood? He did a lot more horrible shit. He also got his followers to operate on each other. He forced members to break their legs with sledgehammers.
Or sledge belts.
Yeah. Fed them rats and insects, nailed people to trees.
Oh.
Because the ceiling got boring, so trees.
Oh, Jesus Christ.
And made people sit on the top of a lit hob or stove.
Did he do this via his powers of persuasion, or did he have, like, jackbooted henchmen to enforce his desires?
Because usually with cult leaders, it's a combination of menace, like the consequences of leaving are such that you may as well stay. They've already cut off everything else, so there's nowhere to go.
Yeah.
They've no one to go to, they've no money, they've nothing. There's usually some sort of gaslighting, persuasive, hot and cold kind of stuff going on. And people often genuinely want to be there. It sounds incredible when they've been nailed to trees, but people tend to kind of in a kind of Stockholm syndrome way want to be there.
Yeah. Well, we've all seen people stay in really bad relationships, and I suppose
it's like
that's
like
that. The mild it's version of that in a way. And then
it's probably in some ways harder to break away from because you're surrounded by other people, and there's that crowd effect of, well, everybody else is kind of going along with it, and maybe the world is going to end.
Yeah.
You know, I laughed out loud when I read this. This is where the contrast comes in. So cults have ways of making money. Usually, they charge the members like, you know, a ridiculous amount to have their foot looked at or whatever it is. It's like there's usually lots of ways they make money, and they make a lot of money. I feel like with this one, they didn't really think it through that much. So the followers made money for the commune by selling baked goods door to door. So they've got
who's that? Is the Girl Scouts? No, it's the Millennialist cult.
They're probably malnourished because they're eating insects.
Oh my God.
They've got teeth missing because he's pulled them out.
Oh, Jesus.
And they're selling cake door to door.
This week on Bake Off, we have Jeanette, who's a member of the WI. We've got Kristen, who's a student. And we've got Francois, who's a member of the Antil Kids.
Yeah, instead of getting the handshake from Paul, you just get a hammer blow to the skull.
Gabrielle Lavallée. She escaped, and then part of the reason he got away with all this is because they thought he was the Messiah. So when she ran away, she thought he still had complete control over her.
Oh, right.
So she escaped, she came back, and she was punished for escaping.
Mm.
Social workers did actually come to take some of the 26 children away.
Okay.
But he still was not prosecuted for anything. until 1989.
Wow, so 12 years.
Yeah, because there was all sorts of abuse and incest and obviously mistreatment going on. So social workers would turn up and be taking children away, but never really, like, did anything else. Gabrielle Avalet escaped again and then went to the police. She was like, I'm done. The sledgehammers, it's too much.
Go on, Gabrielle.
Yeah. Again, this commune officially registered as a church, so the abuse wasn't investigated. They were adults who had a choice. They, you know, they've made the decision to be there. But eventually, he then got life for second-degree murder of another cult member. Okay. But that's still... There were so many other things that he did.
It's like Al Capone getting done for his tax evasion.
So when he was in prison, most of the cult members went their separate ways, but some stayed and sort of, I don't know, formed their own kind of little situation, maybe without the blowtorch, I don't know. Now, this is incredible. He, while he was in prison, because of conjugal visits, he fathered four more children.
Jesus Christ, keep it in your...
I mean, I really struggle to get any joy on Tinder, and I am... Oh, yeah, and in prison he tried to sell his art.
Of course he has.
I don't think... I think there would probably be people quite interested in that, but the prison was like, no, we're shutting this down, you can't... Your art can't leave the prison. In 2011... he was killed by another inmate with a shiv. When the inmate was asked about it, he apparently said, that piece of shit is down on the range. Here's the knife. I've sliced him up.
Wow.
Was apparently his cellmate. So he probably tried to create another cult in prison of one member, and he was just like, no, I'm going to shiv you instead.
Oh, the cellmate was jealous of how much action he was getting.
The Anthill Kids. And it's the weirdest... one I've ever read about,
really odd. Yeah, because of how, like, it's what you said, it's that thing of what he was doing was so horrible that how could anybody think this was in any way beneficial?
I do find French Canadians slightly odd people, and now I know why. My turn. We are going to stay in Canada for my first suggestion, but it's Canada via Russia. So, I mean, 1897, the Doukhobor people, who I'll tell you a little bit more about in a moment, they emigrated from the Russian Empire. And the Russian Empire said, yeah, absolutely fine, you emigrate, just a couple of rules, don't come back, and you've got to pay for it yourselves. And these guys were Christians, but they were not members of the Orthodox Church. And they were best sort of categorised as folk Protestants. And they sort of, they rejected materialism, they worked together in wee little communities, and they did an awful lot of singing together.
Oh, then they went electric and everyone turned against them.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's basically like a very particular sort of wee rural community version of Christianity. Mm-hmm. So they...
Sounds fairly harmless.
So far, so harmless. And they moved to Saskatchewan. A group of them broke off. They became known as the Svobodniki, which is Russian for the free people, or the sons of freedom. They believed in three main things. Firstly, communal living. Secondly, anarchy. And thirdly, nudity.
Yes.
Can you really have communal living and anarchy together? Because I feel like that commune is a bad commune.
And really remember the nakedness, because they're in Saskatchewan, Canada, which is not a place to be naked. The reason that they said they were naked is that human skin, as God's creation, was more perfect than clothes, which were the imperfect work of human hands. So why would you wear clothes?
To preserve it?
That is an excellent piece of bullshit theology.
You'd be out of the group for that comment. You'd be gone.
None of your high school debating team rebuttals.
Now,
take your glass off.
Is that your chat-up line? None of your high school debating society rebuttals. Take your clothes off immediately.
Yes.
While
banging a gavel.
Yeah. So the Canadians were pretty relaxed of these guys at first. But by the 20s and 30s, and they started trying to shut down the Freedomites because they were like, listen, you can't go around everywhere naked. It's just, and so the Freedomites started getting involved in protests, often violent protests, involving Molotov cocktails and bombs. And they did it, yes, you guessed it, naked.
Yeah.
And I love this idea of naked paramilitary action.
Yeah, the IRA went the other direction with the Balaclava.
Yes, they did.
The Freedomites are the opposite. The anti-IRA.
A brief shout out for the Nation of Islam. Now, the Nation of Islam...
Holla at you guys.
Obviously, they're very famous for having Malcolm X as their most famous member. Mm-hmm. And Muhammad Ali sort of flirted with them a bit before going, hang on, you guys are not Muslims, you're absolute whack jobs. They were led by a chap called Elijah Muhammad. And for a lot of the time...
He's doubled down on the prophecies.
Yeah, he really has. A lot of what they adhered to was, you know, I think quite strict down the line Islam. But there, like the Mormons, there was also a sort of UFO whack job addition to it. So
I love Mormons. I've just got to say, I just think they are so... strange.
They are so strange.
So well. With their underwear and their missions and their little badges. Oh.
I tell you what, though, they've been providing employment for twinks the worldwide the last 20 years. They've really gone, we need the sexiest, best turned out preppy young men ever.
That's so
true. Yeah, sure, they're all really cute and like presentable and sweet.
Yeah.
Yeah, you'd want to take a Mormon home to your mother.
You would.
I mean, I wouldn't take a Mormon home to my mother because, like, why are you a Jewish man trying
to convert your 70 odd year old Jewish mum?
Yeah.
I think you're the Mormon to Turner.
Anyway, they believe when you die, you go to the planet Kolob, I believe.
Do they?
Yes.
Oh, God.
Yeah. Amongst other things. And as you said, Helen, the magical underwear, which I'm a big fan of. I'd love to go to like a Mormon Ann Summers, which is just rails and rails of magical
white onesies. Fronts with a magic wand in them.
Yeah.
It's just my magic underwear. That's what the bulge is.
Yeah. Or just and loads of like packets of Mormon dildos, which are just empty packets.
Or John Cage dildos, as they're known.
You're guaranteed to orgasm after 4 minutes and 33 seconds of pleasure. Right, anyway, the Nation of Islam. Let's try and bring this back to some level of solemnity, please, guys. So they believed that UFOs were man-made machines that were piloted...
I don't care. If any cult that goes, it's we're based on UFOs, I am immediately out.
Which is entirely understandable. But they're man-made machines that are piloted not by extraterrestrial beings, but by humans. And they believe that the machines will have a hand in the Day of Judgment. Elijah reported that his mentor, who's a chap called Wallace Fard Muhammad, and he claimed that there was hidden technology on Earth, which selected scientists all around the world are secretly aware of. And that his mentor claimed that he actually owned his own huge mother plane that was constructed on the island of Japan in 1929. But he wouldn't tell him where it was.
We can't stop, like, Katy Perry albums from leaking. I'm sure if there was secret UFO technology on Earth, that would have gotten out by now.
A brief shout out for...
suddenly gone. Malcolm X believed in UFOs.
Yeah.
That's the headline I'm taking
from. Well, no, UFOs are a perfectly rational thing to believe in.
That's fine, but, like, extraterrestrial... not even extraterrestrial technology. He believed it was some sort of worldwide science conspiracy.
Yes.
Have you heard of the real, so-called real Men in Black?
No.
Are you familiar with this?
No.
So it's I don't know if this is real. It's been written about on Reddit and various other places online. But apparently, if you get too close to any potential alien activity, and if you're too nosy, you get a visit from these very scary-looking tall men in black suits, and they're all white and gaunt and really freaky.
Right.
And apparently they will dissuade you from investigating it any further. Now, this is very much one of those things that people say on Reddit, and they're like, I'm not crazy, but this happened. So it's sort of, you know, I take it with a like a gallon of salt, but the idea of it still makes me a little bit freaked out, because I do like to read about this weird shit sometimes, and I really don't need that on my doorstep.
I think it wouldn't be beyond the bounds of possibility that the CIA would employ immersive theatre companies to go out into the world and just be like, you don't have any special powers, there's no such thing as a neuralizer, but go and freak out these kids in their basement so they just stay off whatever secret weapon we're building.
Well, we're an hour and a bit into the podcast and no one's arrived yet.
I just think there's so many people who would research UFOs that they just can't get to them all. So they probably have to categorise the people who get really close.
It's austerity.
It is the cost.
Very briefly, space Nazis. So this is a cult called the Tempelhofgesellschaft. And they are a neo-Nazi esoteric Gnostic sect whose headquarters is in Vienna. They were founded in the early 1990s, and they go around distributing pamphlets which claim that the Aryan race originally came from Atlantis, but Atlantis was like their stopping off point on Earth, because they are actually originally from the star Aldebaran, which I think is far too fucking close to Alderaan for my liking. Adherents of the religion say that there's a space fleet on its way to Earth from Aldebaran, which when it arrives will join forces with Nazi flying saucers that are hidden within the melt ice of Antarctica. And
oh, it's these guys!
These guys,
heard of these guys.
And that the ice will melt, presumably when climate change really kicks in, and together they will help build a Western Imperium.
You'd have thought if the Nazi space fleet was going to arrive, they'd have arrived in 1939.
Yeah, that's a good point.
Of course, no, hang on. God works on different time zones. We've learned this.
Yeah. He does. Yep.
My choice is a cult called the Cult of Vectorism, mm-hmm. which is created by an American visual artist and gallerist called J.J. Brine. I can't decide whether he is serious or not, and I can't decide whether I love it or not. I think I hate it. He often refers to himself as the Crown Prince of Hell.
Nope.
Oh, no.
Do you want, like, regular updates on where I stand with him at the moment?
Absolutely.
It's currently thumbs down.
Okay. He curates and operates a gallery in New York City, which has drawn attention for its avant-garde, postmodern multimedia narratives on the Abrahamic religions.
Double thumbs down.
Okay. And he has referred to his gallery as the official art gallery of Satan.
Oh, thumbs up from me.
That's made me laugh. Thumbs up.
I like that he's bold.
Yeah.
I like it.
Yeah. What?
Imagine him hammering out that deal with Satan. Or Satan's agent.
Was well, like, so, you take
Hang on, I've got Budweiser outside to be my official beer. Yeah. We need to wrap this up.
He refers to his installations as shrines. He claims that his art gallery has seceded from the United States of America and is its own country with its own time zone.
Okay. Yes! my brain was going, slavery, 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 yes, joke!
And clearly because it's got its own time zone, the space Nazis are going to turn up at any moment.
Oh, he is on single thumbs up at the moment for me now.
Yeah, and all of his followers regularly become, like, ministers in this state. Mm-hmm. So he has the Minister for Mannequins. And my favourite one, though, is a fellow artist called Lena Marquise, and she's another performance artist and a Minister of State. At the first exhibition, it was called Body as Commodity, and Lena Marquise offered participants the opportunity to charge their cell phone using her vagina.
This is now ringing a bell. Heard about this.
No, it should ring a phone.
Yeah. Did they have to leave them on vibrate?
And brilliantly, Usher turned up.
Yes, of course he did.
That's right. The musical artist Usher turned up, and he took her up on the opportunity.
He was like, I have 10 phones. Yeah. I'm going to charge them right now.
In all interviews, he refers to himself as I, but spelt E-Y-E.
I am so out.
Yeah.
Usher, we're leaving.
Yeah. His website's great because it's got a little strip down the left-hand side that says, Vector Gallery is the Antichrist. The Antichrist is Jesus Christ. The devil is the Lord. The Lord is the devil. Phone number 213-509-4101. VectorGalleryNYC@gmail.com. So much of his stuff seems like it's satirizing Judeo-Christian religion, apart from when he seems to be defending it. And he says, listen, look at Jesus. This 2,000-year-old man, this sectarian clannish Jew, this megalomaniac, really, who said, I am the only God, I am life, I am the only way to my father, I am my father. The enshrinement of the ultimate psychic vampirism is a skewed proof that God is Satan. And I'll level with you, I quite like a good critique of Christianity, but he loses me at everything switches and folds back into itself so rapidly that you can't distinguish. It's like a gif.
I must say, though, it is a thumbs up for me because he said gif and not jif.
Yeah.
I'm a bit more on board than I was.
Yeah. Do you remember that woman who works in Kentucky who refused to release certificates for gay marriage?
Yes.
Yeah, so yeah. So JJ has a go, doesn't like it, A, because he's liberal, and B, because he's a gay man. And so he decided to curse her. And so he released a curse on her. He did it whilst dressed in a black jumpsuit, a feather crown, and platform shoes.
Oh, work! Nice. Okay.
Yeah, exactly. At the night when he sort of sanctified the curse, there was
Kim Davis is her name.
Yeah, Kim Davis. Yeah. Thank you. Yeah. Mm. There was at this sanctifying of the curse, there was a woman named Liat who sung about the Holocaust in Hebrew. Another girl named Annalise asked guests wow. to pull out tarot cards with quotes from her 14-year-old diary. And then at one point, another woman called Tori, who was his minister of synthetic light, recited a poem about the power of femininity.
Minister of Synthetic Light is the new title for Minister for Exiting the EU, I think.
But, like I say, I still can't work out whether it's some sort of Dadaish Marcel Duchamp critique on religion, which is kind of funny, but kind of tragic as well. Oh, I forgot to say, obviously believes that the world's ending in 2033.
Oh, there we go.
There we go, yeah, so that's full house.
That's quite a realistic deadline.
Yeah.
I can see that.
Based on current trends, yeah.
So, our choices this week for world's worst cult are Harry's? Jesus Christ. Our selection
is... Who's this Harry you've been seeing? Got another podcast behind my back I'm not aware of.
Our selection this week for world's worst cult are Barry's of On Banana, the Motus...
On Banana. Although, On Banana. That's the way the minions in Despicable Me meditate.
So it's of Barry's suggestion of On Banana, the ultimate in motorcycle emptiness.
Yeah.
Surely it can't be too long before the Manic Street Preachers go on a pilgrimage there. Helen's... suggestion of the Quebecois self-surgery loving concubine impregnating rock terrio of the Anthill Kids, or mine of the art school wanker who created vectorism. I mean, it's a varied selection this week, isn't
it's really,
guys?
I really like, there's like the quite earnest small-scale cult of the motorbike.
Mm-hmm.
There's the classic doomsday, the horrible to your adherence Anthill Kids, and then vectorism is someone who maybe was trying to like rip the pit, a bit like L. Ron Hubbard having a bet about forming a religion. They've sort of gone, I'm gonna you know, create a movement and pretend it's a cult, and now it seems to have taken on its own impetus.
Yeah, it's. I mean, I'll put some links to photos of this guy up on our page, because he's, the minute you'll see him, you'll be like, this guy is the person that you befriend in the first week of Freshers and then really regret it. He's just, there's something about, I loathe him, but there's occasional moments when I sort of agree with what he's saying, so I can't pick him. So it's between Barry's motorcycle and this nutter from Quebec.
Well, we've got sledgehammers, we've got blowtorches, we've got amputating limbs, and also... the doomsday that never happened. I quite like his audacity that the doomsday didn't happen and he came up with the worst excuse possible, and then he still kept on doing his surgery on people. So also there's the element of the fact that nobody stopped him for a really, really long time. And I think that's an important tenet of a cult.
Yeah, well, and also, I think I'm tempted to go with yours as well, because with Barry's, like, no one has fully explained to me how the motorbike kept moving, so it might not be a cult, it might be an actual religion.
That's true, yeah.
So we're going to go for the Ant Hill Kids, led
oh
by
God. Rob. God, I never win anything. Oh
And you're not getting a prize for this either.
No.
Before we go, we're going to China for the world's worst news of the week. There has been a crackdown on online rumour mongers and fraudsters. They snared a fresh target. There's a 17-year-old junior high school dropout who pretended to be a billionaire. he gave himself fake titles and posted Photoshop pictures of himself with world leaders. Police in North China's Shandong province said they were investigating the suspect, who's identified by the surname Xi. And one of the characters in his first name, who called himself the Shrunglong Joker. So learn how to spell Joker, pal. She made false claims about his identity, including that he was a board member on the Japanese Red Cross Society, a director at a fictional Shandong Internet Economic Research Center. He also circulated fake images of himself with Donald Trump, Emmanuel Macron, and Angela Merkel. It's incredible stuff.
He sounds like this foot reader guy who got yeah. to meet Gorbachev and Mother Teresa.
Yeah, but he didn't put in the groundwork that the other guy did. Yeah, yeah. He's also been accused of being responsible for a fake state media article. That is bold when Xi Jinping's in charge. And it basically was a fake article that claimed that he was a poverty alleviation hero, whilst also being a billionaire. He went viral on Chinese social media websites after his crafted online identity was exposed, and his Weibo account, which used to have more than 10,000 followers, could no longer be found by Reuters last Wednesday. One Weibo user said, "The young generation nowadays have too much vanity. They've been spoilt by their families." So yeah, we presume that he is currently hanging upside down from one of Xi Jinping's favourite prisons right now.
Yeah.
Before we go, Helen, tell us where our listeners can find you and your podcast.
It's That's a Cult on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, all over the place, SoundCloud. Yeah, it's like a documentary style podcast, and I investigate a niche weird online community in every episode and find out if they're a cult or not.
Tremendous stuff. Meanwhile, we're all off to take Sister Wendy around the official art gallery of Satan. Until next time, guys. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Hail Xenu! That was Helen. That was our episode all about cults. Thanks so much to Helen for joining us via Skype, direct from north of the wall, or at least Manchester, to talk to us about the world's worst cult. Do check out her podcast, That's a Cult? On all your good podcast apps.
Mm-hmm. If you've made it to the end, thank you very much. We hope you enjoyed it. We're after your cold hard cash, let's not fuck about. We're on Patreon, like loads of other great podcasts. You can become a subscriber for just $2 a month. If you give us an extra dollar a month at $3, you get extra content from us. There's some very exciting extra content on its way soon. And if you start giving us $5 a month, you can pick a show topic. We've already broadcast a couple of weeks ago the world's worst death scene.
Yeah.
Not the world's worst death. The world's worst death.
That was saving that for the last episode.
Yeah, no, that was me on stage at the Belfast Empire in 2012.
If you don't know what Patreon is, it's a really good way of supporting a show that you like. Obviously, we're happy for you to listen to for us for free, but if you can spare a couple of extra quid a month, it helps us pay our way in the big bad world of podcasting and helps us create new, extra exciting content that we can then share with you guys. So do check out patreon.com/worstfootforward to find out all the little perks and potential rewards that might fall your way.
Yeah, and just to let you know, we are now 6 people away from hitting our next target. We want to get to 25 subscribers. As soon as we hit that, we're going to start producing one extra podcast a month. It'll probably just be me and Barry, but sort of drilling down into a previous winner. And
like trepanners.
Yeah, like trepanners of history and exposing the vulnerable brain tissue of the past. Who's coming up next week, pal?
Oh, yes, next week we have the excellent Jack Bernhard, the third and final member of the Sad Faces comedy group. We've already had on Toby Wilson and Tom Crowley, the other two members of that group. Jack is a writer, a comedy writer and journalist. You'll sometimes see his articles in the Guardian. And he joined us to talk about the world's worst president.
And guess what? It's not that one.
Guess what? Yeah, you'll be surprised.
Until next week, hail Caesar.
Hail Zenu.
Get
it right.
Oh, fuck, I've bookended this podcast
we
terribly.
Haven't brain rust you well enough.
No, we haven't. Hang on.
There go our careers.
Worst Foot Forward is part of Podnose, the UK's leading independent entertainment podcasting network. For episode archives of Worst Foot Forward and all of the shows on the network, visit us at www.podnose.com. You can also follow us on Twitter via @podnose or send us an email via admin@podnose.com.